Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lottoannahmestelle. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter bjoerk.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The train pulled into Schlangmünd Station under a pale, greying sky. Snow lined the tracks, packed tight and dirty, where the wind had pushed it against the platform. I stepped out first, drawing a deep breath of air that felt sharper than anything I was used to. Will was right next to me, dragging his duffel bag by his shoulder strap and grinning despite his nose already turning pink. We took a shuttle from Schlanding up to Ramsau am Deichstein, which clung to the edge of the alpine slope. Every building looked older than it probably was, with sharply pitched roofs thick with snow, wooden balconies stacked with chopped firewood, and narrow windows that glowed faintly orange as evening settled over the ridge. The main street was quiet. A few bundled up figures walked with purpose but didn't linger. Every step we took echoed between the buildings. The air smelled faintly of pine and smoke. Albin and Marcus were already waiting at the guest house when we arrived. They stood near the steps, both taller than I expected. Albin wore a heavy black coat zipped to his throat, a thick beanie pulled low. Marcus looked more relaxed, leaning against the wooden railing, smoking a cigarette, his backpack at his feet. Meeting them for the first time felt surreal. We'd spoken for almost a year online, but there was still something odd about standing face to face. You get so used to that screen buffer that seeing your online friends in real life is almost uncanny. Will went right up to shake their hands, already launching some sort of joke. They laughed, though I could tell it was more polite than genuine. We were the odd ones out, and it showed. They were the outdoor kids, and we were the indoor type. I kept my hands buried deep in my coat pockets, trying not to look too obvious. We checked into the guest house. I remember sitting down on the bed and peeling off my gloves, the tip of my fingers numb and slow to respond. I wasn't used to this kind of cold. Marcus brought out the maps, unfolded one across the table between us, and we all crouched around it. The trail they picked out looped around the base of Hohe Dachstein, curving through steep sections of alpine forest before veering off into more isolated ridgelines. It would take several days, but nothing they claimed we couldn't handle. We double-checked our gear before dinner. Everyone had the basics. Insulated jackets, thermal base layers, crampons that we wouldn't actually need, ultralight sleeping bags, collapsible cookware, freeze-dried meals, snow goggles, and small fire-starting kits. Each of us carried a knife. Nothing large, just those small, practical blades, meant for wood shaving, rope cutting, and food prep. Mine fit in the side pocket of my pack, half the handle wrapped in red tape to make it easier to find by torch. That night, we walked through the quiet village and stopped at a small restaurant tucked between a bakery and a church. Inside, it was warm, a stark difference compared to the outside. The food was heavy, rich with gravy, and the portions looked fit for men twice our size. The locals didn't speak much, and when they did, their tone was clipped and curt. They weren't rude, but there was no welcome in their eyes either. You could tell they'd forget about us as soon as their eyes wandered somewhere else. Still, none of us cared. We could tell they weren't being rude. That's just how it was around here. We were set to head out the next day. Everything was packed, charged, checked, and sorted. We were ready. Or at least, we thought we were. Morning came with a hard chill that clung to my neck even after I layered up. The sky outside the guesthouse window looked washed in pale blue, broken only by faint streaks of cirrus clouds that barely moved. We ate quick, loaded our packs, and met in the narrow gravel lot out front. Marcus checked his watch and gave a nod, as if to formally signal the beginning of something. I tightened the straps of my pack and glancing at Will, who looked too pleased with himself for someone who hadn't hiked more than a few city parks. We set out through the village on foot. Snow crunched beneath our boots, packed just enough to give way with every step, but not deep enough to slow us down. The trailhead sat just past the line of spruce trees on the edge of town, marked with a worn wooden post and a frostbitten map encased in fogged plastic. Their poles clicked rhythmically against the frozen path. Will and I trailed slightly behind, mostly because we kept stopping to take pictures. He'd pause every few minutes to make some stupid comment about posing against the trees or pretending to fight off imaginary bears. I told him to save the battery, but he kept doing it anyway. The forest around us grew denser as we climbed. The wind stayed still. Branches drooped under the weight of snow that looked older than the season. I began to notice that the snow was getting deeper. It hadn't looked that thick when we left the village, but up here, it gathered around our ankles and sometimes higher. Marcus called back to make sure we were keeping pace, and I gave him a thumbs up without saying much. I didn't want to admit how quickly the cold was biting through my gloves or how my calves had started to ache already. Then we saw a rusted metal sign nailed to the side of a pine tree off to the right of the trail. Snow had crusted around its edges, bending against the faceplate where the metal had bowed outward. It wasn't bright enough to reflect anything, but it caught our attention because it didn't match the wood markers we'd been following. Marcus stepped off the trail first and cleared some of the snow with his gloved hand. The red lettering emerged beneath it, streaked with rust. Geschlossen wegen Unwettergefahr. Closed due to severe weather. We stood there for a moment. The sky above remained crystal clear. Albin gave a short laugh and said someone had forgotten to take it down after the last tourist season. Will nodded along, already pulling his phone from his pocket to take a photo of it, saying it would make a great inside joke later. We'd been delayed by nearly 2 weeks. Flights got cancelled. Weather elsewhere turned unpredictable. Marcus said most trails this high didn't see real traffic this time of year anyway, so someone forgetting to take this down wasn't too weird. The trail beyond the sign dipped slightly before rising again toward a distant line of trees. Snow-covered rock jutted up beyond the forest, and above that, the pale crown of the mountain sat framed against the sky. We stepped past the sign and kept going. It just looked like a shortcut, and we wanted this trip to be memorable. So why not do the stupid thing? We had been walking for nearly 2 hours when Will slowed down beside me and pointed toward the ground ahead. I looked where he gestured, squinting against the glare. There, in the snow, just past the sloped patch of trail where the trees thinned, a set of footprints curved gently off to the left. The edges were sharp, the indentations clean, not yet softened by wind or drifting snow. The pattern suggested boots, maybe slightly smaller than Albin's, but deeper than mine. They cut across a slope and disappeared into a thicker patch of forest that veered away from the main trail. Marcus was already moving toward them before any of us spoke. He crouched down, pressing two fingers into the nearest print, and nodded to himself. "Someone came through recently," he said, lifting his hand and brushing off his glove. "Probably this morning." Albin came up beside him and followed the line of tracks with his eyes. "Looks like they were heading northwest. Might be going toward that outer ridge." Will and I exchanged a glance. We were excited. Every step we took on the empty trail gave the impression that we were moving through something abandoned. I mean, we knew it wasn't, but given the fact that we arrived here during the off-season, we'd already kind of accepted that we wouldn't be seeing too many hikers here. Seeing footprints, even from a stranger, meant someone else was out here. We were excited to make friends, meet new people, and hear new stories. Will gave a grin and said we should try to catch up. He said it would be good to meet someone who actually knew these paths. I agreed, though part of me suspected he just wanted a break from trailing behind Marcus and Albin, who barely seemed winded, while Will and I already felt the ache in our legs. The path veered gradually uphill, but there were no trail markers in sight. The ground was uneven and covered in layers of snow that looked older than what we'd been hiking through earlier. Branches lay half buried in the snow, many snapped at their middles, as if from weight rather than age. The trees grew closer together here. The light filtered through in a canopy that seemed lower than before, despite the fact we were climbing. Marcus stayed ahead, eyes down, occasionally checking the spacing of the prints. Albin trailed close behind him. Will and I moved slower, watching our footing through the sections where the snow dipped into holes beneath tangled roots. The air had changed as well. I hadn't noticed it until then, but the breeze had faded. There was no wind brushing across my ears. Every now and then, I looked up and scanned the forest, expecting to see movement between the trunks or hearing distant voices. Nothing. Whoever walked through here must have been experienced, I thought to myself. The footprints showed no signs of backtracking or double-checking. Eventually, Will muttered that we should have caught up by now. He wasn't wrong. The prints had looked fresh when we found them. They should have led us to someone, or at least showed signs that the person had stopped. But there had been nothing. Still, none of us said we should turn back. The idea of meeting someone, anyone, had become a silent goal. So we kept walking, eyes locked on the tracks, boots pressing into snow that had only been disturbed by one person before us. The climb began to wear on us after another hour. The slope had steepened, gradually enough that it was barely noticeable. The air had thinned, and each breath started to carry a raw edge. Will was the first to speak up. He stopped and leaned forward, hands resting on his knees, his breath fogging in bursts as he looked over at Albin. "We need a break," he said, not quite out of breath, but close. Albin didn't argue. He dropped his pack into the snow and pulled off his gloves to flex his fingers, red from cold. Marcus, who had been ahead by a few meters, turned back and raised an eyebrow. I could see from his expression that he didn't want to stop. He looked back down at the trail, then at me, as if asking for confirmation. The prints still looked fresh, The snow around them hadn't softened or filled in. Whoever we were following couldn't have been far. I told him we'd keep going, just for a few minutes. If we didn't see anything soon, we'd turn around and meet back here. Will looked up and gave a lazy wave, already digging in his pack for a protein bar. Albin muttered something about starting a small fire while they waited. The forest grew denser with each step. The trees were spaced more tightly, their branches reaching inward, creating a canopy that filtered the light and gave everything a dull grey tint. Some of the trunks had twisted and broken unnaturally, bark peeled in strips, and several trees sagged in the middle as if something heavy was on top of them, heavier than snow. Branches lay broken across the path, not snapped by storm or wind, but fractured at clean angles, many buried halfway beneath the snow as though they had dropped vertically. If I didn't know any better, I'd have assumed a monkey was climbing around here, the branches dropping and snapping under the weight. Then, the prints stopped. We both saw it at the same time. Marcus slowed, then came to a full stop. I stepped forward to join him and stared at the snow ahead. The trail had continued in a clear pattern until this point. Deep indentations in a single line, heel to toe, spaced evenly. And then, nothing. The track simply ended. A clean line of prints that led into untouched snow. I crouched down and brushed at the powder with my glove. The surface resisted. There was no hidden depressions beneath. I looked left and right. The snow in both directions stretched out without disturbance. Marcus spoke up and gave a sturdy explanation. Snow must have fallen in that section earlier. Maybe a small drift had covered them up. It was plausible. Marcus glanced behind us, then turned and started walking back. I followed without speaking. The forest around us creaked slowly. Somewhere far off, a branch cracked. When we got back, the forest had started to dim. The light no longer filtered cleanly through the trees. Shadows had stretched across the clearing, and the smoke from the fire drifted unevenly in the air. Albin crouched beside the flames, turning something over in a small steel pan, the handle wrapped in cloth to keep it from freezing fingers. Will sat on a fallen tree trunk, gloved hands cupped around a plastic mug, steam rising from whatever he had mixed inside. They had already pitched the tents. They stood a few meters from the fire, staked into the packed snow with ropes strung around buried stones. Will looked up as we stepped into the light of the fire and raised his eyebrows. No luck? Marcus shook his head and dropped his pack next to a tent. Tracks just stopped, he said. Looked like snow covered them. That explanation satisfied everyone. Albin handed us bowls and divided the food. Some dehydrated stew he had rehydrated with melted snow. It tasted overly salty, and the texture left something to be desired, but none of us complained. The heat settled into my stomach, dulled the tension I hadn't realized had built up. We drank from metal cups filled with warm powdered cider that Marcus had packed for morale. The taste reminded me of something from a childhood field trip, though I couldn't remember where. Will tried to tell a story, but eventually started forgetting where he was going with it, which made it funnier. Albin snorted through his nose, which nearly spilled his drink. I caught myself smiling. While we were conversing, it had started to snow. It didn't fall heavy. The flakes drifted down in slow spirals, catching the light of the fire and tumbling through it before landing soundlessly around us. The flames flickered orange and yellow, casting moving shadows into the trees. Then, out of nowhere, conversation was interrupted. "Shh, shut up." The words cut through the laughter. We all stopped moving. The only sound for a moment was the hiss of the melting snow on the edge of the pan. Then I heard it, faint but clear. Crunch, crunch, crunch. It came in slow intervals, snow compacting underweight. Not loud enough to be something big, but still close enough to be dangerous. They circled. The sound moved behind the trees, disappeared, then returned again from another angle. Marcus stood. He looked toward the direction of the sound, eyes narrowed, posture tight. "Hey!" he shouted. Something moved. A thudding scramble pressed into the snow and broke it apart. 4-point rhythm, heavy enough to echo off the surrounding trees. I glimpsed the shadow moving between trunks, long enough to sense mass. Then it was gone. No one moved for several seconds. The forest turned to stillness. "It's wolves," Albin said. He didn't try to dress it up. Will opened his mouth, probably to choke, but closed it again. He looked at me, then at the tree line. We decided to sleep soon after that. No one wanted to say it out loud, but a presence like this was enough for us to want to cut this specific hike short. We could go to a different trail, and being in the presence of wolves while off trail didn't seem like a fun time.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
When morning came, I stepped out of the tent, boots crunching as I shifted weight onto half-frozen ground. And I saw them. Prints. Dozens of them, all around the tent. The snow had recorded every step in perfect detail. Some had pressed so close to the nylon that I could see where the paws had shifted mid-stride. They circled in low, looping arcs. Some approached the tent directly, then turned away again. A few branched off into the woods before rejoining the others. Marcus walked up beside me and let out a low breath. Albin came out next, squinting in the morning light, then staring at the ground. Will followed and whistled through his teeth. "Let's move." We packed in silence. The tents came down quickly, our hands moving with more speed than coordination. We started moving, and after about 2 hours of walking, we finally admitted what we didn't want to. The original trail we had followed, the prints we had chased, were gone. The snowfall had erased them. Not even a partial indentation remained. There was no path to retrace. Marcus adjusted the strap across his chest and looked north. "We follow the sun. We head low." None of us had a better idea, so we walked. We moved in silence for the rest of the day. The snow had deepened again, and each step sank further than the last. The slope dipped in places, then rose without warning, forcing us to stop and catch our breath more often than before. The sunlight filtered through the trees in pale shafts, but none of it felt warm. Everyone stopped speaking at this point. Will had not said anything for over an hour, which felt unnatural coming from him. Albin occasionally looked behind us. Marcus walked ahead, his shoulders squared, presumably in an attempt to fake confidence. I began to notice movement. It started with a flicker just outside my field of vision, something moving between the trees. I couldn't make out exactly what it was, but I knew it was there. The shape appeared again further along, a bulk sliding from one trunk to the next, then freezing when I looked at it. The others had seen it too. I could tell. Will walked closer to me than before, his eyes fixed ahead, though they twitched toward the sides when he thought no one was watching. He rubbed the back of his neck. His mouth opened once, then closed again without saying anything. We continued on without speaking. Our boots dragged, no one looked behind us anymore. We knew we were being followed by the wolves, but running was out of the question. We were too afraid of them giving chase. It was Albin who stopped first. His legs gave out on a patch of uneven snow, and he dropped to one knee. He didn't curse or complain. He just stayed there, shoulders rising and falling. The rest of us gathered around him without deciding to. We had reached our limit. The clearing we stopped in was only a small gap between the trees with a slope leveled out for a few meters. It wasn't much, but it was enough. Marcus set down his pack and began unpacking the tent without waiting for agreement. There was no discussion this time. We were all feeling the pressure. We didn't split off into separate tents. We needed to be in one place. We didn't cook. No one gathered firewood. We opened vacuum-sealed meal packs and chewed through them without warming them up. The food was dense and cold. My teeth ached with every bite. Will passed around a canteen of melted snow mixed with sugar tablets. Four bodies pressed into one space with barely enough room to stretch out. Our bags lined the edges. Our boots remained on. Each of us kept a knife in our hand. The fabric walls moved faintly whenever the wind pushed through the trees, and I watched the seams with a growing certainty that something stood just beyond them. I woke up sometime in the early hours. My body throbbed from the awkward angle I'd been lying in, and the air inside the tent had cooled into something sharp. My breath turned into mist and faded just above my face. I remained still, ears straining. Something had woken me up. There was movement outside. I heard the sound of paws pressing into snow. One step, then another. Slow, measured. It moved in circles around us once more. I could hear it, or them, sniffing. I turned my head. Will was awake. So was everyone else. Their eyes were wide, their faces expressionless. Marcus had his knife in one hand, held just beneath the sleeping bag. His knuckles had gone pale. We all turned our heads in unison as a tearing of cloth rang out in the tent. Cloth was pulled tight, threads separating. A line opened along the corner, slow at first, then wider. The cold surged inward. A shape pushed through the tear. The wolf's head appeared at first. Its eyes caught what little light came through the snow, reflecting a dull, liquid yellow. Its muzzle opened. I saw the teeth just before it lunged. It clamped down on my shoulder with sudden weight, and heat exploded across my collarbone. My scream rang out in my own ears. The tent collapsed into chaos. Everyone moved at once, arms flailed, blades flashing. I stabbed through the dark with my free hand, the knife barely penetrating through thick fur and skin. The wolf snarled, its body jerking. Albin hit it in the side. Marcus drove his knife into its ribs. Will stabbed at the shoulder, hand trembling. The cuts were shallow, but they came fast and wild. The wolf twisted, trying to pull back. Its legs kicked, its jaw loosened. I kept stabbing until my arm gave out. Blood covered the floor of the tent, soaking into my shirt and pooling in the folds of the sleeping bag. Then, the animal fell. Its body went limp, its mouth hung open. I couldn't tell if it was breathing. As we waited for another one of them to enter the tent, all of us shaking from adrenaline, we turned our attention to a noise we hadn't noticed during the scuffle, but was present all throughout. Thrashing, thumping, then whining, then silence again. Inside the tent, we did not speak. We waited. No one moved for several seconds after the wolf went silent. My breath came in short bursts, each one shorter than the last. Blood soaked the left side of my jacket, hot where it had spread, cold in some places. The knife in my hand felt heavy, slick and unsteady. Albin's arm trembled beside me, the blade in his fist still raised, though his eyes were locked on the tent wall, waiting for another sound. But nothing ever came. Will leaned forward first. His fingers reached out, hesitant, and gently pulled at the corner of the torn tent wall. The flap peeled open slowly, held together by threads that had not fully ripped. He peeked through, just a narrow glance at first, then widened the opening with both hands. He did not speak. Marcus leaned over and looked. Albin moved next. I stayed still, pressing one hand into the bite on my shoulder, the other gripping the tent pole for balance. When they stepped out into the snow, I followed. The ground surrounding our camp had been torn apart. A single branch lay at the ground at the edge of camp, one that wasn't there when we got here. Wolves lay scattered across the snow in every direction. Some had been thrown against trees, others were collapsed in contorted positions, limbs bent at angles that suggested violent force. Fur was matted with blood and patches of ice. One had its ribcage split open, another lay without a jaw, a third was missing its front legs entirely. Their bodies stretched beyond the perimeter of our camp. The snow around them had been trampled. Massive prints stamped into the crust, some deeper than others, forming erratic patterns. They were roughly human in shape, though the spacing and depth made no sense. Some stood close together, others stretched meters apart. Albin stood near the edge of the clearing. Marcus paced in a slow circle around one of the larger corpses. Will just stood with his arms hanging at his sides, the knife still dangling from his hand. I sat on the packed snow and pulled my jacket off slowly. The wound throbbed beneath my shirt. The skin had been punctured in three places where the teeth had broken through. Albin knelt beside me and opened the med kit. He poured water over the bite, wrapped gauze around the arm, and tied it in place with strips of clean fabric. Marcus stood guard without speaking. We didn't even wonder about the human footprints around. We had no more energy or willpower to ask questions. We just started moving solemnly again. We left our tent there. we just walked without a clear direction for what felt like hours. We saw something familiar. In the snow ahead of us, a narrow set of footprints ran parallel to our path. Human, the edges sharp, just as the last ones had been. Hope did not need to be acknowledged. It passed between us at a shared current, carried by the possibility of someone ahead. A trail to follow, a direction to believe in. We stepped into the line of prints and followed them through the trees. We didn't even ask one another what another human was doing here, or how the footprints just appeared in the middle of nowhere, without any prior tracks. The trail curved slightly ahead, then narrowed. We walked for 15 minutes, maybe more. The prints continued in a clear path. Then, they stopped. The ending came abruptly, just like before. We paused for a moment, contemplating our next move. It was Marcus who saw it first. His arm rose slowly, fingers stiff, and he pointed upward. We followed his gaze. There, suspended between the highest limbs of a pine several meters ahead, something watched us. Its form stretched unnaturally, broad through the chest, its shoulders rounded with thick cords of frozen muscle, completely frostbitten. The surface of his body was torn and pitted. Segments of skin looked burnt or blistered, with patches missing entirely. Coarse fur clung to sections of its frame, but most of it had been rubbed away or never grown at all. Long antlers, covered in moss and what looked like veins of black frost, jutted from either side of its head. Its eyes met mine. They were green, unmoving, and wide. Its legs hung beneath it, short and pale, but unmistakably human. They swung slightly in the breeze, too small to support something of that mass, as if borrowed from something else and crudely attached. The branches creaked beneath its weight. Then, they broke. The thing dropped. It struck the ground with a blunt thud that sent snow upward in a ring around it. The limbs absorbed the fall, then flexed. The body shifted towards us. It reached out with both arms, gripped Marcus by the waist, and lifted him into the air. He didn't even have time to scream. The creature slammed him into the snow once, twice, then flung him against the tree trunk. His body folded and broke at the base. We ran in different directions, each of us driven by the instinct to survive. My legs moved before my thoughts caught up. The air tore past my face, thick with snow and the sharp scent of blood. I did not call out or check to see where the others were. Branches tore at my sleeves, the terrain blurred, trees passed in rapid succession. I tripped once, fell into a bank of snow, then scrambled out without feeling the pain. My shoulder burned from the wound, every jolt sending a wave of nausea up to my neck. I could not stop. I could not breathe without hearing the echo of that thing hitting the ground. At some point, the slope began to descend. The snow thickened underfoot, and the trees opened into a familiar pattern. I recognized the broken trunk on the right, a line of disturbed snow running through the clearing. I knew the scorch marks on the tree where the first fire had been built. I had returned to the first camp. The tent still stood in fragments. Blood had frozen in streaks along the entrance. The bodies of the wolves had begun to settle into the snow, their outlines softened by frost and time. Nothing moved. I dropped to my knees beside the tent and crawled inside. The sleeping bag remained in a heap, twisted from the fight. I found the one I had used and pulled it around me. The zipper barely functioned, jammed from the torn lining. I shoved myself deep into the fabric, got into the warmest shape I could manage, and tried to slow my breathing. Outside, the forest remained silent. I waited in the shadows until my muscles refused to respond. The first sound I heard came with the crunch of packed snow and the low hum of an engine. I remained still at first, unsure if I had imagined it. Then I heard voices, one male, one female, speaking German or Austrian. Then a second engine, closer. I pushed my head from the sleeping bag and looked toward the torn edge of the tent. Two figures approached on foot. The jackets bore patches. Mountain patrol. Behind them, a snowmobile idled near the edge of the trees, its tracks buried in a swirl of powder. One of them knelt beside the tent, then leaned back and called over a radio. The other moved toward me, crouching low. He spoke to me calmly, asking my name, asking if I was alone. I nodded. He asked if I was injured. I pointed to my shoulder. I tried to speak, but the words came out hoarse and cracked. I started to explain. I told him about my friends, about the creature and what it had done. He listened, but his face did not change. He placed a hand on my wrist, told me to stay still, and wrapped a blanket over my back. Later, I would learn why they had come. The wolves we had encountered belonged to a monitored pack. Each carried an implant tracker used by conservation authorities to study movement and behavior. According to the data, the signals all stopped within the same 30-minute window. That kind of mass failure had never occurred before. They assumed poachers. They dispatched patrols, and they found me. I somehow ended up getting a lawyer who spoke in clipped English, told me to cooperate and say as little as possible. An article would come out later. Tourist accused of illegal wolf killing faces sentencing on Friday. They said trauma had distorted my memory. From what they theorized, cold and blood loss created hallucinations. My judgment was fractured after experiencing a traumatic event. The conservation laws were strict. Wolves in this region were protected under the national and EU policy. Killing even one carried prison time. And I had been found in a camp surrounded by corpses. My story was never considered. I served 20 months.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.